My name is Mona Lisa. I'm a problem solver, a motivator, and most importantly, a mother. When my daughter was just 18, she was sentenced to 10 years in prison. It nearly destroyed our entire family, but we persevered. And now I'm on a mission to help other families going through this nightmare by bringing them out of the darkness and into the light. This is Prisoner of Hope. I'm Mona Lisa and welcome to Prisoner of Hope. I'm going to take you on a journey focused on the true love of three sisters involved in an experience that jolted their lives. And to this day, Lillian and Lucille can't really explain what happened. The three sisters were from one family. Politics and conspiracies left them wondering how they could help their oldest sister, Tamla, fight a prison sentence that they believed she never should have been given. Lillian and Lucille both wanted to be a part of their older sister's life, even after her sentence, and to be able to visit and support her when she was inside. But they can't because she's been moved to a facility over 4 hours away. This move seems to be a good in ideas and hopes that she can get access to necessary medical attention, especially at the height of the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. But at the same time, it's not possible for them to see her weekly and ensure that her sister feels the support that she needs and ensure a successful rehabilitation later. It's a proven fact that family support reduces the chances of inmates returning to prison by 70%. Prisoners with existing medical conditions are often ignored and neglected, as the health care available for inmates is subpar, to say the least. There is a bright light at the end of the tunnel because Tamla is in line to be released as a result of the COVID-19 virus and her existing serious illness. Soon, the sisters will finally be reunited. Let's take a look at their story.
Lillian Mitchell and Lucille Humphrey have both admired their sister, Tamla, as a political force that would pride herself on her community outreach in Akron, Ohio. This led to a group of black elected officials targeting Tamla for her influence, using a smear campaign against her just days before an election. As Tamla serves a 5-year sentence, Lillian and Lucille are concerned about the lack of suitable health care available to Tamla, who suffers from ongoing heart complications.
Hello, ladies. How are you? I want to welcome you both and thank you for coming on. How's it going?
Good. Good. How are you?
Good, good. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what you shared, and that's the concern that you both have about your sister, who's currently incarcerated. And where is she incarcerated at right now? Not the prison, but the state?
Texas.
And you guys are where?
In Ohio.
You're in Ohio. Ohio. So your sister's in Texas. Okay. Your sister's in Texas and you guys are in Ohio. And you share with me that you had a major concern about her health. It's obvious that she had some health problems before she went in, but it apparently got worse when she went in. Tell me a little bit about that and how that's bothering you guys.
Smoker. Number one. And with that, we know comes a myriad of complications. And she started having issues with her breathing. She started having issues with her endocrine system. And that seems to be the major problem right now, is her endocrine system with her blood sugar levels going up and that causing sores or whatnot on her feet. Blood pressure is a major issue. And infections ensue as a result of that. And she's been having a lot of problems trying to get the medical attention that she needs and getting it on a timely basis so that she doesn't, you know, go into a coma from the blood, from the diabetes, or have a heart attack from the high blood pressure, have a stroke. And there's been many times where she was near that point, you know, with all the stress from being in there, the stress of dealing with the other inmates. You did the 60 days in, so you know what I'm talking about. When you have volatile situations that can arise, even though she's not an instigator source to speak, the stress all the same, is causing the health issues to exacerbate or get even worse. They're being severely exaggerated as her being in there. And mm-hmm. the inmates have to pay for their medical care. So it's very, very stressful on her, and it's coming out. It's working its way out into her skin, and mainly in her foot. She keeps getting these reoccurring infections, and she's not able to walk. It even spread it up to her knee, and it's just been terrible.
We've almost lost her twice. The first time, when she was in Virginia, West Virginia, she ended up getting so septic, her bloodstream. The infection got into her blood. We had no idea how ill she was. I knew something was wrong because we couldn't get a hold of her. And finally, you know, we just made phone call after phone call and found out that she was in the hospital. By the time we found out that she was in the hospital, mind you, our sister almost died from infection in her bloodstream, but no one from the prison, no one told us. We found out she was in the hospital after she got released, and she made a phone call, and I was terribly upset asking her, why didn't she call us? And she just, when I tell you, she burst out into tears and just cried, because they assured her that they would call us to let us know that she was hospitalized. That has happened to her twice. We just, the communication with the prisons and her health, our sister could die in there and we probably wouldn't find out for weeks later. It's just horrible. It's horrible. Her condition, why she was moved, it's horrible.
Right. And that's really hard on us because, you know, with her being in West Virginia, even though it was a 5 to 6 hour ride from here, it total separation for us. It's so much harder to get to Texas now. And, you know, the whole idea of her going to prison was to be closer to her family. Mm-hmm. So they moved her, you know, without any, not that they have to tell us anything once they had you in there, but no notification to the family whatsoever. She was just gone. And there was nothing that we could do to stop. And we can't get there. It's not feasible for us to get there on a regular basis as it would have been had she stayed in West Virginia. And I think the part that is so discontenting for me is the fact that she's supposed to be in a medical facility.
Right.
And she's not getting medical attention.
She's not getting the proper medical attention. Where she is, the reason why they said they moved her was so that she could get the proper medical attention. But let me tell you, they are lacking severely.
And the way that they treat them is like they're not even human. The things that the guards are saying to her, you know, all that they, it's bad enough that you're in there, but to be treated like you're not a human being is a whole ball game, a different ball game altogether. And it's not fair because you're escalating a situation that doesn't need to be escalated. Because you're a so-called prisoner doesn't mean that you can't be entitled to or deserve proper medical attention and human respect.
Yes.
And it's been very, very difficult. Yeah, it's been very difficult.
I can imagine that it's been difficult. I mean, you guys both know that my daughter was incarcerated, and then I also went to jail for 60 days. And although it was only 60 days, I came out with a staph infection that still 6 years later, or 5 years, I think, 5 years later, I'm still dealing with because it was never properly treated while I was in. And it hasn't, you know, if I hadn't gotten any help when I got out, I would have been in really a serious, serious bad condition. I want to ask you, ladies, how does it feel like if you were to describe your feelings right now? I know that I'm hearing fear, I'm hearing anger, I'm hearing worry, I'm hearing all of that mixed together. Would that be a correct assumption that you are feeling that right now?
Yeah, and the other is grief. I mean, it really is. It's a process of this. She died because a part of us, a part of us has died. She has been moved from us for still, we still don't understand why. Why was our sister ever punished for a crime? We're still trying to figure out, what did she commit? So it's like going through an actual loss of a loved one. And it's not sometimes, it's daily.
You hit the nail on the head, Mona Lisa, when you talked about the fear, the anger. We go through all of that, all of that, because we're talking about someone who was dedicated to her God, dedicated to her community, mm-hmm. loves politics. Mm-hmm. It is who she is. It's a part of her. And to take her from us, to take her from the community who she did so much for, it's very disheartening. So, yes,
well, let me say this. Let me jump in on you ladies here. I hear what you're saying. I feel your pain and I understand exactly what you're going through because I've been there, done that. I'm not trying to discount it. But what I am saying is that I feel like we need to get an expert in to talk to you guys a little bit about grief and to talk to mm-hmm. you a little bit about fear. And the reason why is because I could give you all kinds of exercises. I could make you understand, you know, the reality of what you're going through. And I will do that. I will definitely show you some exercises on, you know, how to breathe, how to actually understand that, you know, what you're experiencing is real and you may not be able to fix it. That is a fact. But how can you get your own body, your own mind in a peaceful and harmonious, you know, situation and alignment so that you can begin to help your sister? Because until you two get in alignment with yourself and in alignment with harmony, there's no possible way you'll ever be of any service to your sister. So what I want to do with you guys, if that's okay, is I'm going to jump to a break and then I'm going to come back to you guys. And I want you to meet Laura. She's a psychiatrist and she's our resident psychiatrist. I want her to have a brief discussion with you around grief and fear. Will that be okay with you, ladies?
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Okay, well, stand by. We'll be right back.
We should not have to worry about our loved ones being in fear for their lives. They should be able to go, do their time, and come home.
Ladies, we're back, and I want to tell you that there's nothing that beats fear but action. And one of the things I know for a fact is you two are women of action. And with it, when it comes down to your sister, may I suggest, you know, that you get in contact with that prison and that you find out who's over the medical department. Once you find out that name, then I'd like for you to get in contact with the warden, and I want you to write a letter to the warden and to the person who's over the medical department, and I want you to FedEx it to them or UPS it to them. Don't just send it in the regular mail, because then they have to sign for it and they have to admit that they've received it. Not saying that all prisons do this, but some do, okay? And that's your first step. I want you to kind of really focus around getting to know who's caring for your sister so that you can find out and have more hands-on approach. And do it in a spirit of love. You know, don't do it from a demanding perspective, because if you do it in a demanding perspective, all they'll do is rebel and work against you instead of working with you. So try to put on your smiley face. I know it's not going to be easy, but try to do that. And as it relates to your grief and fear, you know, without a doubt, everyone knows that when you lose someone to the system, there is a 7-step stage of grief that you go through. It's very similar to death. But because that's sometimes over my pay grade as far as how I can explain that to people, I like to bring in my resident psychiatrist, Laura, and I like to have her talk to you guys about that. And Laura, I wanted to ask you, you know, how does one handle fear, you know, when they're dealing with a loved one who's inside and clearly not getting the appropriate health care that she should be getting? Because everyone, if you're not aware, prisons do not give the best health care, because it is not their desire to spend a lot of money on the inmates. They want to keep you housed and keep you inside and take care of you for as little money as possible. I can imagine that a lot of people that are watching are probably saying something like, well, that's what they need to get. That's what they are, criminals. Okay, that may be your thought process, but the reality is they are still humans. Just like when you made a mistake when you were a kid, your mother didn't punish you and then throw you away for life. She punished you and then she brought you back to life and gave you another chance. That's what our system is supposed to be doing, right? So Laura, you know, how is it that they can handle fear and grief, considering that everything that they have is so realistic?
Well, a couple of things. Grief, fear, anxiety, and anger are riders. They ride together in the same car. So I think you can't like pinpoint one without first dealing with the other, because there's layers to the process of the grief. So when you think about the fact that you are angry, I heard as I listened to you and as I studied your case, I heard that, you know, we're still coming to terms with why. Why was my sister put in this position? What happened? What are the true facts? We don't really know. Did she do what she was accused for? So that yields or lends us to the anger, because, you know, there's a mistrust of the system. I mean, hereditarily in the Black society, we don't know what they plant. We don't know what they create. We don't know what they make up. And we know that they can often stack chips that we can't fight against, right? So coming to terms with that first, because that part of the anger first is the driver and the rider of the anxiety and the fear and the grief, because I'm trying to come to terms with an unknown. So for you guys, from the most healthy perspective, I think, you know, get as many case notes on your sister as you can. Try to understand the laws that they say she violated. Well, then that can help you come to terms with what was created, what evidence they had, what things substantiated this. Because the truth of the matter is if I'm not in the building, I can't get arrested, right? So there was something that happened that gave a place where there was a potentiality that something could happen to her. There's something she did, or some room she was in, or something she was connected to, that they could tie her to a crime. But you guys don't know what those things are, so study it out, right? That'll help you feel better and more clear on where they came up with, if they cooked it, if they made it up, or whatever.
So Laura, I want to ask you a question. What is it that they can do about their grief and their fear that can kind of help them become more productive and work through it a little better?
Right. The unknowns are a part of the process that makes the grief more substantiated. Coming to terms with the answers you don't have, I think, is the biggest thing. Making sure that you can sit clearly and say, I don't have all the answers. I don't understand everything that's happening with my sister, but I want to continue the process of loving her where she is right now and doing everything I can to be the most beneficial for her. Tying us up in information, getting all the information you can from the case, studying it, understanding it will be beneficial as well, because you made mention of that you guys don't really understand how she got here. So understanding that will help you. But coming to terms with, this is our normal, this is where we are now. Something happened, my sister's in a situation, and I have to try to manage how I deal with it and how I deal with her. So anxious thoughts drive us to, you know, theories, conspiracy theories, ideologies, this happened, that happened. And that is will drive you crazy. That will make you get to a space when you're trying to figure out the unknowns. You don't understand the unknowns, but you have to come to terms with, my sister's here. How do I manage and deal with her appropriately where she is? How do I love on her here, get all the information I need to make sure she's served in a way that she stays healthy, she stays in control? Rolling off the guilt and rolling off the shame. Believe it or not, a lot of guilt and shame causes us to feel the anxiety and the grief. I haven't come to terms with the fact that I can't even believe this happened to my family, right?
Oh yeah.
Who would ever think this would happen to my family? Those type of ideologies drive anxiety. So if you can come to terms with the fact that, man, this happened to my family, not to have guilt about it, not to have shame or pain about it, not to give anybody any answers about it and not to feel any need to provide any answers about it. It's something that happened to my family and we're going to live through it. And my sister's going to come out on the other side of this, an amazing woman, and her vision and the things she desired for her life are still going to happen. She's not going to die in this prison. So just taking those negative mindset concepts that attack all of us when we're dealing with these type of situations. Oh my God, my sister's going to die here. No, she's not. Your sister can very well live here. She can very well thrive here. She can very well write the book of the century in this position. She can very well still impact the education system in this position because her life is still happening. So that's the part I think for us as family members coming to terms with what happened, it impacted us. I'm upset about it. I'm embarrassed about it. I'm ashamed about it. I have guilt about it. I have guilt that I'm out and she's in, right? Those are riders. Those are what lead to anxiety. They lead to fear. But the coming to terms with the grief that it happened and that our family is going to go forward from here. We're going to be stronger. We're going to be better. And we're not a stain because this thing has happened to us. I think when we get those ideologies out of the way, we can get clearer on living the rest of our lives with our sister, whatever that looks like, in a healthy mode.
Agreed, agreed. So that sounds like to me, we're looking at mindset. You know, overcoming and challenging yourself when it comes down to negative thoughts. We're not necessarily discounting anything. Once again, that her health care is being challenged and that we do need to, you know, get in touch with the prison and we do need to get more aware of that case. So ladies, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I want to keep you lifted and send you lots of love and energy to know that you will make it through this. You will make it through this and we'll be on the other side helping you, making sure that your sister is being heard and taken care of. And we'll do everything we can to continue to make sure that we are all together prisoners of hope. Okay? Take care of yourselves.
Thank you. Thanks.
Prisoner of Hope is not just a show. It is a movement to restore empathy and to rebuild the family unit. Catch episodes early on the PrisonerOfHopeTV.com website and YouTube channel. Subscribe to our blog. Learn more about Mona Lisa and access The Vault, a video resource library designed to help you in knowing your rights, tips on post-incarceration life skills, starting your journey to self-discovery, understanding family and parenting relationships, and more. Looking for resources in your neighborhood? Use The Vault to type in your zip code and find therapists, reentry programs, food assistance, and more. Prisoner of Hope needs you to get involved, and there are three ways. Learn how you can volunteer, donate, or even become a sponsor of the show. Interested in booking Mona Lisa to speak at your event or on your panel? Learn how under the contact section on the website. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to find out about upcoming Prisoner of Hope tours and other special events. Hope isn't canceled. We are in this together.
We're in the middle of COVID-19, an outbreak, a pandemic, a challenging time for many, many, many families, especially for those of us who have loved ones incarcerated. But let me tell you, there is hope. There is a bright side to this because we'll eventually come out of this. And together we can do this if we just stay in contact with each other. Yes, they're telling us to social distance. Yes, they're telling us to physical distance. But that does not mean that you can't pick up the phone and call someone. That does not mean that you cannot accept a call from someone who's inside. The reality is that we are prisoners of hope and we want to stay focused on the positive things. So yes, healthcare is a challenge. Yes, there's a lot of sickness going on, but at the end of the day, this will pass. Reach out and talk to somebody today. Reach out because they need you. They need you.